Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Wattier.
And I'm Tommy Welling, and you're listening to the Fasting for Life podcast.
This podcast is about using fasting as a tool to regain your health, achieve ultimate wellness, and live the life you truly deserve.
Each episode is a short conversation on a single topic with immediate actionable steps. We cover everything from fat loss and health and wellness to the science of lifestyle design.
We started Fasting for Life because of how fasting has transformed our lives, and we hope to share the tools that we have learned along the way. Hey everyone, welcome to the Fasting for Life podcast. My name is Dr. Scott Wattier, and I'm here, as always, with my good friend and colleague, Tommy Welling. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Doing fantastic, my friend. Good to see you this afternoon. Excited for today's conversation. Let's just blow everybody's hair back, right? And just get it. Let's not dangle the carrot today. We are going to be going over 42, yes, 42 factors that affect blood glucose. Now, before everybody skips through or says, nope, back it up, not going to listen, too much information, don't worry, we're not going to be going over all 42 factors. But this article came from a really interesting individual and website of the Diatribe Learn or diatribe.org. And it's all about making sense of diabetes. So a shout out to Adam Brown and his original article that came out in 2014 that over 400,000 people have viewed his initial list of what was 22 factors, right? And now he's come out with an updated list of 42, and we were like, wow, this is really cool. It is coming from a diabetic. It is coming from his experience of working with healthcare providers and so many diabetics and scientists and all of these hundreds of thousands of people that have responded to his research and his articles. We thought it would be really cool to go through and put our spin on and our interpretation and our Fasting for Life stamp on some of these as it's been a big update, and really just some of the things that we see personally and also inside of our programs, inside of our challenges, and inside of our reach, you know, as we now 225 plus episodes in and 3.5 million downloads later. So I really just thought it would be a cool conversation to dive in and give some perspective and some nuance, because it isn't just black and white when it comes to blood sugar. Ultimately, it isn't black and white when it comes to diabetes or disease processes, but there is a huge lifestyle component.
Yeah.
Hence, welcome into the Fasting for Life podcast. If you're new, what an absolute great episode to start with. If you want to hear more about the handsome bearded gentleman, Mr. Tommy Welling over there, or myself, you can head back. My beard's good, but it's not as good as his. I got too much white. mine's more like scruff. But anyway, head back to episode one. Give it a listen. Also want to give a shout out to the OGs of the Fasting for Life podcast. Appreciate you continuing to listen in. And we just, if you've got a moment, you want to share some thoughts, we would love a review. That tells the podcast world that we are bringing value each and every week, which is our goal, which is our mission. We want to pull people out of the obesity epidemic, the diabetes and blood sugar epidemic that we have here in the States and across the world, one person at a time, one shared episode at a time, one action step at a time. So we're going to distill down these 42 things that can affect blood sugar. We're going to give you our take on which ones we think are the needle movers. And then hopefully our goal is, as we say each and every episode, take one or two things away today that you can put into your fasting lifestyle. All right, I'm out of breath, Tommy. Rock and roll here, because he even says, I know what you're thinking, 42 factors that affect blood glucose? Are you kidding me? Right. Well, no, we're not, because the big premise here is some of these are going to be like, whoa, and some are going to be like, yeah, duh. But here's the reality. If I eat right as a diabetic, pre-diabetic, I was a pre-diabetic, my dad was a diabetic, we've helped dozens, hundreds now people that diabetes, reverse it, type 2 diabetes specifically, obviously, I want to make that clear. If I eat right, exercise, and take my medication, I should be good, right?
Right, right.
But what happens to blood glucose after 5 hours of sleep? A low-carb breakfast, lots of exercise, high stress, and a big cup of coffee.
Or maybe where I was.
Yeah. Pre-diabetic, didn't know it. Blood glucose was coming up fine. Liver enzymes were a little off. weight was coming on, even though I was counting calories and tracking macros and working out. It's like, dad, full-blown diabetic of 30 years on multiple forms of insulin on 17 medications. Well, there's a bunch of steps, right, in between there. But it's like, well, what if? What are the ones, right? What are the things that move the needle and allow us to get those long-term sustainable changes? So, Tommy, let's get into
it. Yeah, my favorite part about this is how widely applicable it is to everybody listening, even if you've never really thought about your blood sugar that much or don't feel like blood sugar is something that you need to focus on. The cool thing here is that as we can integrate some of these things as good habits, good overall understanding, it will help to prevent future issues. Because at some point in life, there tends to be like, oh man, I'm not quite as healthy as I used to be, right? Like even just time, our insulin sensitivity goes down over time. But there are things that we can proactively do to keep it as high as possible, to optimize that and kind of protect that. So even if it's not an issue, it's really, really good to kind of internalize some of these overall principles. And I think a big one for me as a big macro and calorie counter tracker for a lot of those years while I was trying to get the weight off was just the fact that overall, just thinking about it thermodynamically, like a calorie is a calorie is a calorie. And one of the big ones that sticks out to me on this list is just timing of day. So not just carbohydrates as far as a macronutrient, but also meal, but your overall timing during the day, because when I bring in food, especially more carbohydrate rich food later on in the day, there's just not a lot of things that my body can do with it at that point. So even though, yes, it might be the exact same macro profile and the exact same number of calories as I could have had earlier in the day, there's just not a lot to do with it right then. And body's trying to get into a rest and repair mode, into a healing, time during the day here while I go into my sleep cycle. And I just brought in a bunch of extra fuel and with really nowhere for that to go. So that's important to understand that that's going to lead to elevated blood sugar, which is then going to lead to elevated insulin, which are both problematic over time. And so if I can control that, if I can make a few day-to-day changes, at least on most days, that's going to be very, very helpful.
Yeah, and we'll give a shout out, right, to Adam. We'll link the article in the show notes as well. There's a really cool like visual representation. So there's these categories that he groups them into, which is really cool. I love in the way of an application because it reminds me of a research that we stand on, that we've built our coaching programs on, that we've built our blood sugar balancing programs on, our challenges on this Marie Spreckley and her team that came out with systemic meta-analysis and a review of the literature that showed all of these categories of life and all of these internal and external categories. So monitoring, goal setting, et cetera, where there were these internal and external factors that would govern whether or not you would be able to sustain. Mm-hmm. So motivation internally, externally, social pressure, family, spouse, doctors, healthcare providers,
mindset,
self-image, mindset, right? Self-image stuff, all of that. And this reminds me of it because it's grouped into categories. So Tommy just mentioned one in terms of the activity category, right? So that food, the timing of the food, which we've talked about in certain episodes, right? The response of 8 a.m. versus 8 p.m. The 8 p.m. meal, you're going to have a 30% chance of an increased blood sugar response, right? With the same meal. So the activity category is great. Then the other categories, just for big picture, are food, medication, biological, so physiology, environmental, and behavior and decisions. And I really think the behavior and decisions kind of goes hand in hand with the food category.
And activity,
right?
It's a decision. If I want to bring in food later on in the day, that's going to lead to a biological response, right?
Right, absolutely. And then there's some medication considerations, especially as a type 1 diabetic from his perspective. Mm-hmm. As my dad's perspective as a type 2 was, I got to eat this amount of carbs so I can take this amount of insulin. Sure. Well, what if you just remove the carbs?
Yeah.
Duh, right? There's one of those duh moments. So when we're looking at these categories, the activity category is really interesting. Like we just mentioned that one of our pillars is like that food and insulin timing, that time of day. We just recorded an episode on that morning exercise versus the afternoon exercise. This is going to be a little bit different for everyone. The way we framed it in the previous episode was in preserving our sleep. So don't get up and do the 5 a.m. boot camp if you're sacrificing your sleep because of your cortisol response, your insulin response, et cetera. So this can work for some and not for others. So morning exercise can cause a smaller drop. If you are more insulin, tend to be more insulin resistant in the morning, which then goes to one of the other categories about having higher, more elevated blood sugar at night, right? Which will cause blood sugar to be elevated more during the day.
Yeah.
So the time of day or the level of fitness / training at that time of day, the high intensity versus moderate versus walking at low intensity, steady state exercise, which is literally just like zone one, zone two, versus the light exercise. All of those things are going to vary for the individual, right?
Yeah, 100%. And so, and that can be part of the confusion, part of the issue, especially when you're taking advice that's fairly fairly broad in nature, which is like, you know, when I look at this list and I see things like inaccurate blood sugar reading, that's an interesting one I've never heard talked about before. So that's on the environmental part of this list. And so, you know, what that can be is, you know, like every machine needs calibration. But when I take a look at actually interpreting that data, regardless of what time of day I actually did it, and in varying my time of day actually increases how much of a problem that is, because then I'm comparing apples to oranges at that point. But if I actually get an inaccurate blood glucose reading, I don't necessarily know that. And so you can take measurement with two different devices and you could see a 10, 20, 30 point difference. And that can be problematic for your mindset too, because then I'm interpreting that difference and I'm going, okay, wait a minute. If it's higher than I expected, then I might feel like discouraged or frustrated if I've been doing things right. Or it might be telling me to change something that I don't need to be changing, because what should have been a 100, maybe it came up as a 130. And then I said, okay, well, maybe I need to adjust something, but I'm not really sure where to start. So all of a sudden, my gears are turning. I'm trying to figure out what problem to solve when really there's no problem there. That can be an issue, because then my mindset gets hit right there.
So here's the juxtaposition I'd like to make between the activity category, which is light exercise, high intensity, moderate exercise, walking, level of fitness, like what's your VO2 max, where are you health on the cardiovascular spectrum of health, the time of day, right? And then that food component of being more hungry with certain types of exercise, et cetera. All of those can either be neutral or up or down, depending on the individual, right? Depending on the metabolic state. What was interesting about the environmental category, Tommy, you just mentioned an inaccurate blood glucose reading, right? That can go up or down. But under the behavior category, so you're not really sure, but more frequent blood glucose checks tend to show a decrease in blood sugar because you are attracting an attention to it, which then results in a change in behavior. So the inaccurate reading, yes, it may be willy-nilly up or down because, you know, obviously expired insulin or temperatures, cold plunges, saunas. We've worn our CGMs in both of those, right? They go haywire.
It does. Temporarily.
Sunburns and altitude, all are environmental things that can move the needle. But the inaccurate blood glucose reading falls in that environmental category. But if you're doing it more frequently, and that's why I love the application of a CGM, especially if you're pre-diabetic or diabetic or have insulin resistance,
because it's effortless. You're getting more getting more readings right there without doing more.
Present time consciousness. So attention to it. I was sitting in the sauna the other day and I heard a guy, he was like, yeah, I've lost 40 pounds. Been about 3 months. There's a bunch of us in there. We see each other often. I've now got one of those Russian wool cotton, 100% cotton sauna hats.
That's cool.
I look like a giant Christmas ornament. But apparently I don't want to lose a little bit. I got a little thinning back here. My dad's still got a full head. It's thin, but a full head. I'm just like, I'm baking my hair. I'm probably, so I wear this, you know, looks like a Christmas ornament now. Maybe I'll put it on one day.
Couldn't hurt. That's good. Christmas episode.
The point is, he was talking about, if I'm doing the cold plunge and like I'm getting in and it makes me think about the food decisions because I'm doing it with an intention.
Right.
He's like, if I'm going to suffer for 3 minutes, like I'm going to make a better food decision because I know why I'm suffering.
Right.
Because I have a ton of weight to lose and I've got fatty liver, right? Like, so that behavior and decision category is really interesting to me, especially with that more frequent blood glucose check.
I absolutely love that. It's so cool how all of the arrows end up, you know, connecting to the other ones. And that's the thing about macro and calorie counting is it's such a small piece of the puzzle. It's not that it's an unimportant one. It's just that the decision tree doesn't stop there, you know, and it's connected right from one day to the next, because the quality and quantity of my sleep today is going to definitely affect my food choices tomorrow. It's 100%. And so, you know, another one that I thought was interesting was just, actually like food with insulin timing. So if you look at food and insulin timing, again, this is one that, you don't have to be diabetic. You don't have to be using insulin medication to actually learn something from this one, because, you know, if you're going to have your large meal and you're going to have an insulin spike and you're going to be bringing in, you know, energy stores, like let's say you're doing one meal a day, you could piggyback your highest activity off of that too, which would be a good thing. You could take advantage of the calories coming in, the fuel, and the insulin spike that actually happens after that. I would plan my most strenuous time of day around that. Whereas if we weren't really thinking about it, by default, I might have that towards the end of the day as like maybe a 6 or 7 p.m. OMAD or something like that. But then not have really a whole bunch of time to burn through that, or to kind of redistribute that the insulin load and the calories that came in. So it's just cool how you can take a couple of these little pieces and then start to fit them into your lifestyle, you know?
Yep. Hey, y'all, I wanted to take a second and tell you just an incredible story about an amazing company that we've come across recently. And now they are a sponsor of our show. It's airdoctorpro.com. You can head to the website, use a promo code Fasting for Life to receive up to $300 off. But most importantly, my little guy, my 2-year-old, has not slept consistently through the night since he was born. We have tried everything you can imagine. He is our third child, and we're just like, what is happening? So we have gone to great lengths, time, money, and effort to figure out how we can help him sleep. And the reality is, we're pretty much just resigned to the fact that this is how it's going to be until we put the Air Doctor Pro in his room. And I am not joking when I tell you, the first night that we put it in his room, he slept through the night. The second night, slept through the night. Now we're up to 35 plus days that he has slept through the night. He has only woken up 2 times rather than 2-3 times a night, 2 times in the last 35 days and counting. And we are just so incredibly grateful. The reality is, we had a feeling that it was something that we were missing. And the indoor air that we breathe is 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air these days. In some cases, up to 100 times more. We spend 90% of our time indoors and we take 20,000 breaths a day. So what's the solution? An air purifier, a cut above the rest. I'm not going to lie. We have tried others. We've tried other HEPA filters. We've tried other air filters. We have spent the money and they have not done the results that Air Doctor did in literally the first day that we put it in his room. They filter out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants. That includes pollutants such as allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mite, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses. So I don't know what it was that was keeping them up, but it is now gone. So Air Doctor comes with a 30-day breathe easy money back guarantee. So if you don't love it, send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com. Use promo code FASTINGFORLIFE to receive up to $300 off air purifiers. An exclusive listener offer for you as well. You'll receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. That's exclusive to you, the podcast listener, now hearing this in real time. Lock this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code FASTINGFORLIFE. You guys know that we are very particular with who we partner with. And if it wasn't for this incredible company and the incredible results that we've seen, I would not be encouraging you to head to the website and take advantage of the Fasting for Life promo code. So if you support our sponsors, you are ultimately supporting us. We are grateful for you listening in. And now back to today's episode. So we've mentioned a bunch that are situational dependent, right? Mm-hmm. The time of exercise, the type of exercise, the food and insulin timing. You know, you just mentioned the inaccurate blood glucose reading. And then I said, well, yeah, but there is one that's pretty common that shows clear as day, more frequent checks means lower numbers,
agreed,
right?
Yeah.
So I want to highlight and talk about the medication category for a minute. Mm-hmm. This is something we get questions a lot about. But there's, you know, medication dose, medication timing, medication interactions, right? Those are all things that are variable to the situation. But there's a couple that are pretty clear cut in terms of things that you will see changes in your blood sugar. I'll say, I'll also combine this. I want to transition into the biological or the immunological response here in just a second mm-hmm. as well, because there are some that are pretty consistent across all demographics, right? Just like the medication category, where these things will 100% see an increase in your blood sugar. And those are the steroid administration. So cortisones, steroid injections, cortisone shots, creams, those types of things, they will absolutely show an increase in blood sugar. Considerably, like a considerable increase, especially if you are pre-diabetic or diabetic. We're talking, 2x, 3x, what your normal numbers would be. And what it shows is that, yes, that's going to happen, but then typically you will see a reduction pretty quickly post-stoppage. But if you're on, let's say, like I used to be, a steroid inhaler,
yep,
that's a different scenario. Or you're on a cyclical prednisone to reduce the inflammation in the alveoli of your lungs, which I was on. Repeated use can result in the proliferation of insulin resistance, which is elevated blood glucose for long periods of time, requiring your body to produce more insulin to manage those blood sugars. And then a secondary one in this medication, which is the niacin or vitamin B3. So diabetics, nerve neuropathy, B vitamins are typically a recommendation for healthy nerve function. Well, those could also be causing an increase in your blood sugar. I'll add one more category to this. Statins can also show an increase in variability in your blood sugar. Well, what's the best form of healthcare? Prevention.
For sure.
So knowing the other categories, if you're already on these things, then you have to have a conversation with your healthcare provider, right? And say I'm adopting a fasting lifestyle, I'm going low carb, because we're going to talk about some of these food and more biological ones here in just a minute that are like, yeah, these are things you should do if you want to decrease your blood sugar and ultimately prevent or reverse blood sugar related issues and or metabolic syndrome type issues.
Yeah, because the tough thing is, like, especially if you were on insulin or a blood sugar lowering medication, if you added statins or something else that you just added, put that in the mix, that can be problematic, because then that rise in blood sugar is then leading to a rise in your A1C, and that may necessitate further increasing dosages of another medication. Then you're kind of, you're in a cyclical situation right there. And so, slowing that process down so we can ultimately stop it and then potentially reverse it is absolutely the goal. So we have to kind of understand how some of these things relate to one another. But like on the positive side of the biological, if you look at recent hypoglycemia, which I thought was interesting, because this is geared towards diabetics. A lot of times hypoglycemia is, if you're looking to control your blood sugar numbers, then obviously you don't want hypoglycemia. But at the same time, a lowering of blood sugar can be beneficial during a fat loss phase, because then we're going to have lower insulin levels, and we're going to allow burning through long-term fat stores. And so what's good to note here is that recent lowering of blood sugar leads to more prolonged lowering of blood sugar. So as we start to make better food choices, compartmentalize some of our time restriction windows, and then lower our insulin levels sufficiently so that we can maintain a little lower blood sugar and burn through some of those long-term fast stores, we tend to get into like a rhythm of being able to do that. And so that's really beneficial, because if blood sugar is rising, especially going later on into the day, we're kind of having to compete against that all throughout the night and hoping that it kind of comes down and those levels get lower coming into the next day. But it's a lot easier to keep blood sugar and insulin a little bit lower once we get it there, rather than having these large swings and competing with the ups, you know, trying to get back down.
Yeah, 100%. And there were so many good ones here, and there's so much overlap too that I want to avoid potentially talking in circles. But there was a couple of the new food factors that I wanted to mention, kind of building off of what you were just saying. Is the original, you know, when we talk about carbohydrates, right? Let's just talk brass tacks. If you eat more carbs, you're going to have a higher blood sugar response. Like it just is what it is.
Yeah.
Right. We can't fake that. We can't fake ice cream. Oh yeah, it's fine. No, more carbs, more sugar, more carb response. Well, some of the new additions, however, I found interesting, things that we talk about, things that we teach, are the type of carbohydrate. Refined, processed, sugar-based carbs versus healthier, more, you know, whole food-based carbohydrates, right? So, yes, the number of carbs, but now the types of carbs, not all carbs are created equal. So, carbs from green veggies, nuts, seeds, low-carb, high-fiber type things, berries, etc., have a lot more fiber and a lot less sugar. Versus those higher processed, more, you know, refined processed carbohydrates, that will be especially liquid carbs in the forms of alcohol and or sugary drinks, right? Yeah. You're just going to be literally pumping blood sugar or glucose into your bloodstream, which is going to result in a higher insulin response. So I really thought that was interesting because, yeah, we can't get around the carb thing, right? But the caffeine, alcohol, and dehydration in this category were interesting to me.
Yeah. I'm going to start with caffeine for a second here, because caffeine's an interesting one, because you know, the point of caffeine is to, or the reason why most of us have it, is to increase energy levels, essentially. Get us going in the morning, or, you know, maybe a little pick-me-up midday, something like that.
A little appetite suppression, some black coffee maybe if you're fasting.
Yeah, for sure. But it can definitely lead to some swings in blood sugar, and which can be a little surprising if you're not expecting them. But they're
happened to me.
Go ahead.
Happened to me.
Yeah. It can lead to a rise in blood sugar, but then it can also lead to a compensatory fall in blood sugar afterwards as well. So depending on when you're getting that reading, how long after it's been since you actually ingested the caffeine, how much of it you had, it might stay relatively stable, or you might see some swings in there too. But when you get to things like alcohol, it's even more variable because of what can come along with alcohol and time of day also. So it tends to be later on in the day usually. But at the same time, depending on how you're ingesting that alcohol, it could be alongside other snacky things, high carbohydrate snacks, or even worse, arguably, some of the sugary mixers that will go along with the alcohol as well. So not only are you bringing in fuel in the form of alcohol fuel, but you could be hitting the blood sugar really, really hard with some of those mixers too.
And I would also get a hypoglycemic response with caffeine and alcohol while my insulin resistance was high. So not yet diagnosed a diabetic or pre-diabetic, but it was absolutely showing up.
Yeah.
And it would show up in my fatigue and in my brain fog and my energy levels and my sleep, right? So we talked about meal timing, right, being closer. We're going to connect the dots there in just a second to the biological, which is the, you know, late night blood sugar numbers having an effect on your blood sugar numbers during the day. That's one of those duh issues, right? But in this category, though, Tommy, I found one related to coffee, the age-old debate. Does coffee dehydrate you? The answer is no. Come at me. It's fine. It doesn't. Okay. But what does is dehydration. So dehydration will raise blood sugar levels for those in a fasted state. And it also increases levels of the hormone vasopressin, which pushes the liver to produce blood sugar. So we don't talk about just drinking water. We talk about hydrating properly, using trace minerals, salts, etc., to help balance out that blood sugar response. But being dehydrated can absolutely increase your blood sugar numbers, which this one, you know, just kind of stood out when we're looking at it, because it's not a, well, it could kind of be, you know, a net negative,
yeah,
like caffeine or protein or fat, or it could increase depending on what you're eating those protein, fats, or caffeine with. Alcohol, absolutely up, and then a hypoglycemic response down. But dehydration, 100% up.
Just up, and that's a problem. And you know, that's also contributing or exacerbating what we hear about the dawn phenomenon as well. So a lot of people are used to seeing that and used to looking for a rise in blood sugar in the mornings, but it's going to be, I mean, the morning time is your most naturally dehydrated time of all of the day. You just went through 6, 8, 9 hours without drinking anything. Your body was still working. So it can be the most like long drawn out dehydration session of the day.
Sounds like you're dehydrated. Yeah. Need some water.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm gonna take a sip here.
So that's only going to be, you know, raising those blood sugar numbers even higher. So even though the dawn phenomenon is not going to go away, where you have that morning blood sugar rise, and a part of that is physiologically and circadian, you know, related and absolutely necessary for a proper wake up cycle. And so that's a good thing. But if we can minimize the part or shorten the amount of time that it takes to kind of recover from that in the morning by front loading the morning with some good hydration, that can be very, very beneficial, because we don't want to go through much of the day, if any of it, dehydrated. So, you know, upon waking, I'm immediately going to rehydrate and start that process like very, very quickly.
Let me go back even a step farther. It starts the night before. Even an OMAD dinner, like a big OMAD dinner, even if low carb, will cause those numbers to stay elevated overnight. Combined with, let's say you're not drinking enough water, you wake up dehydrated, and maybe there's a little dawn phenomenon taking place there, right? You're absolutely going to have elevated numbers in the morning. Yeah,
and if you had alcohol the night before, that's going to add to that.
Your body just needs time. Right? And that's where fasting is so freaking powerful, because it can decrease that blood sugar time. It can increase the insulin sensitivity when you break your fast with food intentionally, right? Because you're going to stimulate that insulin sensitivity and balance out the insulin resistance. So I love how all of those kind of, you know, time of day, meal timing, dehydration, dawn phenomenon, overnight blood sugars, all of those kind of blend into this one circadian biology type rhythm. There's some others, to segue more into that biological category, that are absolute blood sugar risers or raisers, I guess, however I want to say that. R-A-I-S, not R-A-Z-O-R-S. Are too little sleep, stress and illness, allergies, smoking, all things. So there's a couple in there. You're like, too little sleep. Okay. You've heard us probably ad nauseum talk about that, just like the last episode. Okay. Totally get it. Gonna move on. Stress and illness. Stress, 100%. Anyone out there been insulin resistant, carrying the extra weight, blood sugar is okay, but you just feel fatigued and tired and crappy and you need a nap and you're snoring at night and your labs are a little bit off, your elevated liver enzymes are up and your blood pressure is a little high, but you know, you're stressed out all the time and you're sick like every 6 to 8 weeks. Oh yeah, that's called insulin resistance. There's an illness component and a stress component to being chronically in a stressed state. It will raise your blood sugar. Mm-hmm. It is a survival mechanism. And I say allergies and illness because allergies as well, chronic inflammation, a lot of the over-the-counter stuff too, I found in the clinical setting with patients is if they're taking OTC, Claritins, all those types of things, you're going to see an increase, an elevated blood sugar response. When we have these people go through the protocols and they track their numbers, they stop the meds, the inflammation comes down, they're not as insulin resistant, they're making better food choices, they're sleeping better, they're working on their stress. Wow. And guess what? That stuff tends to go away.
The symptoms came down too at the same time, right?
Yeah. Yes. And then smoking, I mean, that's just, I mean, by now, right? I know doctors were, you know, back in the day, those old funny ads. Yeah. Camels are right for you, right? Never too early to start your kid on. Like, we know now, okay? Like, not good for you. So, just a couple of the other biological no-brainers there, right?
Yeah, because when we talk about recent illness and stress, just remembering the fact that the body is having to work harder in those situations, and the body is literally looking for fuel to fight the situation. So it's natural that the blood sugar would kind of be on the rise. The problem is though that like if you've ever like I know you personally you've gone on like some longer rounds of antibiotics. You know, like
post my arm surgery. Yeah,
exactly. And then
I got the shortest one I could get, but it was still long.
But then the residual effects of hitting the blood sugar and hitting the insulin levels, like you felt that for a while. You were like, man, sleep is terrible. I feel, you know, the scale ticked up 5 pounds, 8 pounds, and it just doesn't want to come off for a while too. I believe on the last time it was a couple of like 2 or 3 months before you kind of felt back to normal. And so that's oftentimes, you know, not really well understood or not talked about. So I think just knowing that and going like, okay, well, I'm not feeling great right now, or maybe it's allergy season for me or whatever that kind of looks like, that can be the perfect time to make sure that I'm dialed in on my fasting. I'm a little bit more, I'm more consistent with my fasting right now because I know I'm kind of battling this on the other side. So what does that look like on the scale? I'm not sure, but I'd much rather have like a higher level of control, like, you know, pull that lever, especially when I really need to, because the other factors are kind of pushing against me.
Yeah. And that leads me to the combination or the connection point too, is when I was going down the path of figuring it out and spending the tens of thousands of dollars and doing all the tests and functional medicine and whatnot. And we're like, oh, maybe it's my gut. Maybe it's my adrenals. So there's that antibiotic gut connection. People now know you take antibiotics and it depletes your healthy gut flora or your gut microbiome. Now, I am not a microbiome expert. I am not saying that this is a new field of study, right? It's not something I'm dipping my toe in. I know a little bit about it, but I can tell you after taking antibiotics for the first time in 20 years when I had my surgery that my stomach was a mess. And it took a few months for it to start balancing out. So there's something called the Wiseman Institute, done some compelling work with CGMs and microbiome data. And we'll link it. There's a TED talk, you know, on this as well. But how the gut bacteria, which is a very individualized thing, predicts an individual's glucose response to bread. And this was an article in the Journal of Cell Metabolism in 2017. And then personalized nutrition and microbiome data in Cell 2015. And then also the other canary in the coal mine, which is this conversation around artificial sweeteners and are they good or bad and do they affect, you know, one's microgut biome or ultimately what I wanted to mention here was one's blood sugar response, right? So we're doing something to manage our day-to-day allergies, infections, sickness, right? And then we take a thing and then we get this secondary effect that lasts and we don't really know why it lingers. Well, that's because our individual response to that is different. So Tommy, to your point, so powerfully stated was what levers can we pull to dial it in and give ourselves the best chance to respond and prevent future more volatile blood sugar swings and to stay on the straight and narrow and to continue to keep the weight off or lose the weight or reverse the prediabetes, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Well, those are, you know, clear cut in this article, you know, the 42 factors that affect blood sugar, right? We need to stay hydrated. We need to get moving. We need to focus on our stress and our sleep, right? Yep. We need to, you know, if you are smoking, find a way to quit, right? Like the ones that are clear-cut drivers of we need to limit our refined, processed, and total carbohydrate consumption. Right? Like, these are things that are non-negotiables, and that's why the fasting lifestyle and what we teach and what we do is so powerful, right,
yeah,
Tommy?
Yeah, it really is. And as we kind of focus on a few of those things that we can control on a day-to-day basis, like, it's not all going to be perfect. But as we focus on a few of those things, and we go, yeah, you know what? Maybe I can do that a little bit better today than what I did yesterday. And combine that with a little bit more intentional fasting. So if that means like, okay, well, I'm feeling like fasting is a good thing. This is what I need to be doing, but I don't necessarily feel like I'm doing it every day the way that I should be. Okay, so maybe you need a little bit more structure, or maybe you need to push those windows a little bit more so you can get some consistency and see some results on the scale, which then tends to be motivating, for doing it again, like waking up and going, yeah, you know, yep, what, that is worth doing. I feel better and I like what's happening on the scale right now. So, you know, grabbing the blueprint to fasting for fat loss and, finding those little ways that you can put a little bit better fasting into every single day, yep, means you're going to be feeling better, means that your blood sugar and your insulin response is going to be a little bit better, so that even if you're, yep, even if you're not battling with blood sugar related issues, or even if you have some, and maybe it's back in the family history, but you'd like to avoid it, like, this is absolutely how we avoid it, by putting some intention and focusing on the prevention side of this right here. But if you need to reverse it, then this is absolutely, you follow the same path regardless, right?
Yep. Yep. So a lot of duh moments, right, in the 42 factors that affect blood sugar. But if we were going to go big picture, we just mentioned the needle movers, right? So grab the blueprint. Tommy said it. Find a community. Head to the show notes. Click the link. Fasting for Life community. We did a recent highlight in one of the podcast episodes. Somebody was in the group saying, wow, this group is different. Yeah. We pride ourselves on that, right? We don't allow the dogmatic bullying that takes place in other fasting groups. I've been in them. Okay. I won't say the names. Some of them are pretty rude and crude, right? And it's like, no, this is an individual thing. We can all come alongside. We can do it a little bit differently, but use fasting, the tried and true art of fasting, as the tool for the long-term sustainability. What is the best diet for someone? What is the best lifestyle for someone? What is the best fasting schedule or protocol? Mm-hmm. Well, ultimately, there's answers to all those questions, but the best one is the one that you can stick to, and what Tommy was alluding to, not shoot for perfection, but those little wins day in and day out. So you can grab the sleep guide, you can grab the blueprint, you can come hang out in the Fasting for Life community, but take an action today off of this conversation that is going to move you towards your long-term goal strategically, intentionally, and that ultimately is what we want for each and every one of you. Wow. So Tommy, as we wrap up today's episode, man, appreciate the conversation. Still getting used to this whole video thing. Hopefully y'all can see us and this came out right. Just appreciate y'all for listening. And Tommy, as always, appreciate the conversation. And not just talk soon, but see you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
So you've heard today's episode and you may be wondering, where do I start? Head on over to thefastingforlife.com and sign up for our newsletter, where you'll receive fasting tips and strategies to maximize results and fit fasting into your day-to-day life.
While you're there, download your free Fast Start Guide to get started today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Fasting for Life.